T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
To talk about something horrific breaking out in America. I'm talking about a level of violence or anything like that. We just hopefully we can have this nice little calm time where I know a lot of people are looking for chaos. We don't want that. But make sure you are ready to exercise your franchise 1 week from today. And in the meantime, I want to welcome you all to your 3 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Peter King, the one and only, joins us here at 95.7 The Game on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line to talk about a rousing win for the 49ers in Foxborough, the week that was and what is coming up in a very interesting, moving quickly now, NFL season. Peter, thank you for joining us here once again. How are you, sir?
Everything's going well. That was a tour de force, as Garoppolo told me on Sunday night before he got in the plane to fly back. It could not have gone much better. Now, I thought individually for him, it probably could have gone better. But as far as the team goes, they absolutely wiped the floor with a clearly declining New England Patriots.
Yeah, and I don't know if, you know, they are responsible for ending the dynasty, but it felt like that was the game that drove some nails home and the coffin shut for whatever the last 20 years was. And God bless the Patriots for 2 decades of unstoppable brutality over the league. It is so impressive. But we knew, Peter, that the Patriots had a lot of trouble scoring. Where we were shocked is that the 49ers undressed Bill Belichick's defense.
Ran roughshod over.
Something else.
I mean, here's what, you know, Sunday night when I just go back over these games and I just look at every game and try to figure out what I might do. And I didn't know really that I was going to get Garoppolo. But right after the game, I just started looking at things and I said, holy cow. I said, you could argue that the fourth and fifth running backs on this team, after Mostert, after McKinnon, after Tevin Coleman, you could argue the fourth and fifth backs are Wilson and a guy nobody has any idea who he is named Jamichael Hasty. But in my opinion, if, you know, when Kyle Shanahan got on that plane and he sat there and I'm sure at some point he looked at the numbers, he had to look up at John Lynch at some point and said, John, do you realize that Wilson and Hasty gained 169 yards and averaged 6.5 yards a carry against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots in Foxborough, Massachusetts? That's one of the feats of the year. It's tremendous, but it just goes to show you that, look, I'm sure that every San Francisco fan, when the game against Miami happened and the Dolphins are prancing off the field, a bad Dolphins team, you all think, prances off the field after putting up 43 on the 49ers and winning by 26, and you just say, that is, you know, it's wait till next year for the 49ers. You know, Kyle Shanahan, the reason why he is, and again, this is going to sound really like I'm overplaying my hand on Shanahan, but why he has a chance, and I mean a chance, put that in italic, he has a chance to be the young Bill Belichick, you know, this generation's Belichick, he's got a chance, is that He just figures out a way. And he says to Bobby Turner, hey, Bobby, you know, get your running backs ready. And then, by the way, go find a couple more that we might have to use if these guys get hurt. And Bobby Turner just gets them ready, and they end up playing really well. So, I don't know. My hat's off to the 49ers, to the coaching staff, and to those players for what they did in Foxborough.
Well, okay then. Based on that, they look like one of the best teams in football. Yet 2 weeks ago, we were slagging them unmercifully for beating a team that we thought wasn't good as New England. So what do you make of the totality of their year? And if it's more than just injury, then can you explain why they're 4-3 when they can look that good and look that bad in a 2 week space?
By the way, by any measure, the Miami Dolphins are better than the Patriots. And they have been for a year. Over the last year, the New England Patriots are 6-9. Okay, so, I mean, we need to stop thinking of the Patriots. There's a reason why Tom Brady's not there anymore. Okay, he was just fed up with Bill Belichick in essence saying to Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels, "You guys put enough points up on the board, you know, and keep us winning." Because Brady has never told me that. McDaniels never told me that. But in my opinion, if I were them, that's what I'd be feeling. They do not have one weapon on their offense that scares any defensive coordinator. Whereas if you're playing the Miami Dolphins, you know, they've got a few threats on that team. But be that as it may, I understand your question. So what are they right now? I think that it's what is really an interesting thing for this team right now is they're heading into what I would look at as the toughest 3 week stretch of their season, you know, at Seattle, Green Bay at home, at New Orleans. Okay. And so those are three games that, and look, they should probably thank their lucky stars that fans are going to be virtually non-existent at the two, what would have been the two toughest road games they had this year. So that's when we're going to know what these 49ers are. But to me, I just think that, you know, the fact that they don't have the kind of pass rush to really, you know, scare anybody, you know, post Bosa, that, I mean, I think they're a good team. But I think, and I think they could be really, really big trouble for somebody if they get in as a, let's say, a 5 or 6 seed. Or who knows, if they even win the division, they could be trouble for somebody. But I just really want to know how they're going to play, how much longer they're going to play without some of their injured guys, and whether Deebo Samuel, for instance, is going to be able to be a regular factor, you know, at some point this season. And because those are, you know, Richard Sherman and Deebo Samuel are guys who, when they aren't playing, those are huge losses to the bottom line. And plus, man, the other thing that's amazing about what they did in Foxborough, imagine doing it without your two safeties, you know, without Tart and Ward. And that was a lot of things. It was an amazing game, but it also showed how far down the Patriots are right now.
You mentioned the missing safeties, and just in general, this defense has taken what seems like an unbelievable level of injury, and yet it seems to hold together with the exception of one quarter against Miami, in large part because of the play of Fred Warner. And we've sort of been tossing around defensive player of the year odds for him are now in the group with sort of the usual suspects at the top of that board. And what do you make of his odds to actually be the defensive player of the year? And is he getting that level of respect around the league?
He's not getting that level of respect yet. And, you know, how do you really tell after 7 games? I mean, number one, you'd really have to be great every single week. I mean, every single week, to be able to, convince 50 people in the NFL or who watch the NFL. All right. You know, the media people who vote for these things. Okay. You'd have to be great every week to be able to show exactly how great you are. And, you know, because Aaron Donald, to me, he's almost the default guy, you know, who wins this every year. And so, you know, as of right now, they're clearly going to look at Fred Warner and going to look at his great all-around play, you know, recently. But I think what sort of hurts him is he's not set up to be a pass rusher at all in this defense. And so he's really not going to get many sacks. You know, he might get three or four all year. And so, you know, he's got to make a lot of splash plays, in my opinion, to have a chance to be the defensive player of the year. Because, listen, Pro Football Focus doesn't pick the defensive player of the year. You know, they may have one or two people, you know, on the panel who do it, but this is very much still a subjective look at who's great, and, for instance, how great are they totally across the board. And look, Fred Warner is clearly one of the two or three best sideline-to-sideline linebackers in football. And this year he might be the best. But you got to make a bunch of splash plays, in my opinion, to win that award.
Peter King, NBC Sports, joining us here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. I'd like to go back to what you said about Kyle Shanahan possibly being an heir apparent to Bill Belichick in terms of respected head coaches in this league. It almost looks to me that if you ask Bill Belichick, who might be his heir apparent, he would tell you it's Kyle Shanahan. There seems to be
Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. There's a mutual level of respect there that is apparent. And I just think that the way that almost Kyle put it on him shows you how badly he wanted that game, how intently and detailed he was prepared for that game. It's like a chess master sitting down, you know, with the best of the best.
Yeah. It's, you know, I'm sure that any coach who's telling you the truth is going to tell you that when he goes into a game against Bill Belichick, it's going to be one of the biggest games of his life. This is going to sound funny, but, and I forget what year this was. It might have been 2011 or 12, but you guys know Dan Orlovsky. He's now sort of a rising
sure.
star
yeah.
at ESPN, former backup quarterback.
Dan go Orlovsky, UConn.
Yeah, go UConn. He's a UConn Husky. Dan Orlovsky, the best game of his career as a quarterback, he's a backup for the Indianapolis Colts, and he went in and played mano-a-mano against Tom Brady and had a huge day against Bill Belichick's defense. And they lost the game, but I can tell you Dan Orlovsky floated off the field because he knew that he went toe-to-toe with the great Brady, and he solved a bunch of things that Bill Belichick had schemed for him that day. So that's the kind of day. Of course, Orlovsky lost the game. The Colts lost the game. But that's a game that Dan Orlovsky will go to his grave knowing I gave Tom Brady and Bill Belichick everything they had. And I only bring that up because when you play against great players and you play against great coaches, absolutely, totally, unequivocally, you think, I got to be great today. And if you're in any walk of life, you know, I mean, this is a very selfish thing to say, but when I go to the Super Bowl and I work the locker room after a Super Bowl, what's going through my mind is I want to be better than Sam Farmer. I want to be better. I want to be better than all the great writers who are covering that game. I want to do something today that will be better than everybody else does. And I think if you're a competitive person in any walk of life, that's the way you think. And I will guarantee you, he'll never say it, but I guarantee you that Kyle Shanahan, there's a little bit something extra when you walk into Gillette Stadium and across the sidelines is one of the greatest coaches of any sport who ever lived.
We've talked about how New England has basically fallen off the map. Is the thing in Dallas, which looks, if anything, worse than the situation in New England, is that irretrievable at this point for this year?
I think for this year it is, Ray. But I think the biggest issue, in my opinion, is not that they're getting killed the way they are. The biggest issue is that they've got a bunch of guys. If you go back and look at one play in the game in Washington on Sunday, and it's the play that this unknown linebacker, I think Kerry Holcomb from Washington, he's a young kid from University of North Carolina, and Ezekiel Elliott, who's supposed to be one of the best blitz pickup running backs in football. If you just watch the play where Holcomb sacks Andy Dalton, he blows up Ezekiel Elliott, and it looked like Elliott was just not even ready to take him on. And it was just, quite honestly, in my opinion, when I watched it, I looked at it and I said out loud, watching that game, watching that play, that is embarrassing. So give the guy credit for making the play. But Ezekiel Elliott, can you watch tape with your teammates when you sit in that running back room or the offensive room, and then you watch the tape from that game? If you're the running backs coach, or if you're Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, I don't know the running backs coaches, but if you're Kellen Moore or you're McCarthy, what do you say to the highest paid running back in football who you are relying on to keep your head above water, who you're a terrible football team, and your best player comes out and basically whiffs on a blitz pickup and gets your quarterback sacked? It's disgraceful, quite honestly. And that, to me, when I see things like that, I just say the first thing that Mike McCarthy has to do is get his guys to play hard. That's what, I mean, it sounds easy because there's enough talent there to be competitive if they play hard. And I don't see everybody on that team playing hard.
Speaking of the Cowboys, they trade Everson Griffin today for a conditional sixth, essentially a fifth or sixth round draft pick to the Lions. First of all, are you surprised at the low price? And second of all, are you surprised that the Niners weren't involved if indeed the price was so low?
I mean, in the first place, Everson Griffin is not having a good year at all. I don't know if he's playing hurt, or what exactly is going on with him right now. But as I look at that team, I haven't watched every snap of the Dallas Cowboys, so he might be playing better than I thought. But do you remember one play that Everson Griffin has made for the Dallas Cowboys? I don't. I don't remember. I don't remember him making a play this year that would justify. I know Alden Smith has made a hell of a lot of plays this year, but Everson Griffin has not made a heck of a lot of plays this year. And I think when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, you say, listen, the sixth round pick is fine, and we're glad we have that. But the most important thing is to get a little bit of salary cap relief because, look, very much an inside football thing here, but it's really important. When you see trades made at the trade deadline this year, there is going to be an emphasis like never before on the salary of the players on your team. Okay? And the reason that there is going to be this emphasis is that if you can clear let's say, you know, I don't know, maybe whatever it is, $3 or $4 million of the rest of the year for Everson Griffen. Do you know what that means? That means you can add that onto your salary cap for the 2021 season. Salary cap is going down from 198 this year to about 175 next year. The Cowboys have got to have a gigantic amount of space already. I think $42 million or whatever it is for $38 million, maybe that's the number for Dak Prescott, because they will bring Dak Prescott back. And so they need to be jettisoning salary as well as looking to get some prospects back.
Peter, how many footballs will DK Metcalf have to catch to be remembered for catching footballs before he's remembered for catching Buda Baker in one of the more amazing plays I've ever seen on a football field?
Yeah, it's, you know, I forget who said this to me this week, but the NFL season is 7 weeks old, and the most memorable play is a tackle on an interception. And you want to say, well, you know, wasn't that big a deal? It was a very, very big deal. And I think it was, because everybody who plays sports, and even people who don't play sports, can identify with what happened. It looked like an absolutely hopeless play. You've seen 100 times on interception return, guys just peel off at the end like, well, I can't catch him. And DK Metcalf not only looks like he could run the 200 meters in the Olympics and compete, I mean, at his size, but he had this thing in him. I'm trying to get him this week, because I think this is a story that is not just going to be a 1 week story. I want to write about him next week.
I think it's the first play they talk about in his obituary one day. It's the most remarkable thing I've ever seen a wide receiver do without a football in their hands.
Yeah. And you've seen it 2 or 3 other times. You saw Ben Watson do it with the Patriots. And you saw, I think, Don Beebe do it. Somebody did it with the Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl against
that was Beebe.
The Cowboys.
But I think Buda Baker runs a 4.2, though. You know?
I looked it up. Buda Baker's 4.43, and DK Metcalf is 4.34. Wow. So he's a little bit faster. But I'm sure that mentally, Buda Baker, when he was at about the 30-yard line with 70 yards left, he's thinking, nobody's catching me. And I wonder if Buda Baker knew, he intercepted the ball at the 2-yard line. If he knew at that precise moment, if he knew that he was going to need every last yard and run like he never ran before, I think he probably would have scored. But part of him had to think, nobody is catching me. And so, but whatever, hats off, totally, totally hats off to DK Metcalf.
So let's go from weird to mega weird. When was the last time you saw a game that was dominated by the punter, like last night's?
That was an incredible, incredible performance. And you know what was great last night that ESPN did? They showed it twice. They showed punts in super slow motion, including the watermelon punt, or whatever you'd call that one, where instead of the ball being held like any punter would ever hold a football, Hecker held the ball in a sideways way, so that, you know, basically he's holding the ball in his hands, you know, with the ends of the football in either hand. And so he's kicking it like right in the middle, so that when it lands, all it's going to do, Hecker hopes, and I read what he said after the game, his goal when that ball hits the earth is just simply to bounce straight up in the air. And it's just, I love things like that. I love that onside kick, the Dallas onside kick when Greg Zuerlein, you know, kicked, and ironically that was called the watermelon kick, where you just lay the ball on the ground. But anyway, I guess the overriding point I would make is that there's a science to almost every position in the NFL. It's amazing that there's this science to punting that, I mean, some of the guys, the Aussies have brought it over. Darren Bennett brought over, remember when he played for the Chargers, and he had a way to make a ball bounce at the 1 yard line and bounce backwards. And he could do it consistently. And so the science of punting is really kind of a cool thing to watch.
This looking forward to the next week for the Niners. The Seattle defense obviously leaves a lot to be desired. So understanding that clearly their offense is better than New England, do you think the Niners can essentially do the same thing to Seattle's defense that they've done to their last two opponents and just kind of push them around?
I think the question will be, who's going to be on the field for San Francisco? You know, it's easy to sit here and say, well, Bobby Turner can make chicken salad out of chicken feathers, because throughout his career, and I mean, Bobby Turner began coaching for a Shanahan when Kyle was a 15-year-old high school sophomore in Denver. So, you know, Kyle Shanahan and Bobby Turner got known each other for a long time. But one of the reasons why it's so important to this team right now is that, I mean, you might laugh at this, and anybody, if I told you on Labor Day weekend, hey, by the way, you know, you'd be playing one of the biggest games of your year, and a guy named Jamichael Hasty will have to touch it and play well. He'll be touching it 23 times in order for you to win. Now, I don't have any idea if that's what would happen, but that's almost like you're a Dallas Cowboys fan and on Labor Day weekend say, hey, by the way, you got a must game this week on Sunday Night Football, and your quarterback is going to be named Ben DiNucci.
Oh.
You know, I mean, that's why somebody like Kyle Shanahan is really, really important, because you play the game against the Jets, you lose half your team, everybody's hurt, everybody is out, everybody's out for the year, all this stuff. And you have to go to West Virginia and you have to tell your guys and convince your guys, hey, the sky isn't falling, we're going to be all right. And he's done that. And they haven't been perfect, obviously, but he's done that. And that's what he really does well. And I'm sure that they'll figure out a way somehow, some way, to come back from one 3,000-mile trip to go on another 1,000-mile trip against a team that's twice as good as New England. And I think they'll play a really good game.
Peter, I know you're a huge baseball fan. Are we going to get a Game 7 in this World Series?
Man, I desperately want a Game 7. I have nothing against this guy named Gonsolin for the Dodgers, man, but I hope he gives up 9 runs in the first inning tonight. You know? I'll tell you, I really want to see my new favorite guy. Reminds me like a cross between Oral Hershiser and Greg Maddux is this Walker Buehler. I mean, I don't know what he weighs. Not a lot, but he's a string bean, and he is one competitive guy. And I'd love to see him pitch to go into baseball history tomorrow night. Now, I really don't care who wins, no dog at all in this game, but I love Game 7. It's funny, I did Joe Buck for my podcast, which will drop tomorrow. I recorded it about 3 hours ago before he went out to the ballpark. He's in Dallas. And I said, when you wake up in the morning on the day of a big game, football or baseball, what really gets your juices flowing? And he said, there's nothing in my life that I love more, that I love to be involved with more than a Game 7 of the World Series. So that is, in Joe Buck's opinion, that is in a league of its own. And it's amazing that you'd say that even over a Super Bowl. But I think the history of the World Series, even though, you know, you almost have to be a person of a certain age to revere Game 7s and really to revere baseball anymore. But I'll tell you, if there's a game seven, I'll probably be sitting there in my living room in Brooklyn, New York, keeping score of the game because I'm a baseball nerd too.
I love it. I love it. So who's got a better shot from Tampa Bay at a title this year, the Buccaneers or the Rays? Let's be honest.
Well, the Rays, because they're two wins.
Here they are.
But I guess I would say this. Last year, when I made my predictions before the year, and I predicted that the 49ers would be, I did a ranking of 1 to 32, and I had the 49ers number 7. I've never gotten more emails saying you're an idiotic baboon than when I made that pick. And at the end of the year, I could honestly say, hey, you're right. I was totally wrong about the 49ers. I had them way too low, you know. But now, this year, I picked the Bucs to get to the Super Bowl, and that is what really set people off this year. How in the world you could do that? You're in bed with Brady, and all this stuff. And I said, I watched the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. They entered the last two games of the season on a four-game winning streak, and they were 7-7. And then Jameis Winston threw 6 interceptions in the last two games, and they lost 2 games that they should have won both by double digits. So they should have ended up 9-7. And Brady should have been walking into a situation that people would say, oh, man, that's solid gold. But just because they lost those last two games, nobody said that. I just look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and say, okay, it's great they have Brady, but this is a damn good team. That defense is a top 3 NFL defense right now, today. And Brady's got weapons out the wazoo. How long will he have Antonio Brown? 5 minutes or 5 weeks or 3 months? I really don't know. But even with him or without him, they might be today the best team in the NFC as long as their receivers stay healthy. Now, remember one thing, that when I asked Bruce Arians Sunday night about this move, one of the things he said was, the first thing out of his mouth was, it's injuries, okay? Because he walked up to Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Scotty Miller on the field in Vegas before the game, and he said, tell me the truth, guys. What are you right now percentage-wise? How do you feel? What's your physical percentage right now? Scotty Miller said about 85. Mike Evans said about 80. And Chris Godwin said about 80. And, during the football season, if players are saying that in week 7, you don't have a whole lot of chance to get healthy during the season. So Arians looks at it and says, we're going to probably have to go out and get a receiver anyway. So let's give this a go. Now, they're going to take an incredible amount of guff, as they should, for picking up this guy. And I think that Antonio Brown is not going to make it. I've seen this movie too often. But this is a sign that Bruce Arians and Jason Light think we have got the chance of all chances this year, and we're going to the wall to try to win it.
It's a go-for-it move, no doubt. Peter, thank you for letting us go for it for 31 minutes. This is a new record. We've never done an interview this long ever. We're going to get yelled at. We blew through 2 breaks. My PD is going to be all pissed off, but it was worth it.
Okay. I want somebody to say, oh, man, that king, he's almost as good as Steve Kerr in his segment. That'll be my goal in life.
Thank you, Peter. Really appreciate it. That is, it's tough to be that good. That's 5 NBA finals in a row good. But Peter King is the king from NBC Sports, and that was great. That was almost a full show. That was great. So, studio, I know that we're breaking all radio rules right here. What time do we go to? You want me to go to 40? All right, so, guys, we're just gonna keep going. We're just going to keep
on going. It's an hour-long segment.
It's an hour-long segment. It really is. It's an hour-long, commercial-free, interrupted, pump-it-or-dump-it segment.
For the people.
For the kids. Good stuff here. Let me just quickly tell you that we should have been brought to you by Outdoor Supply Hardware. Outdoor Supply Hardware has brought the classic hardware store back, now with 11 great locations, plus the new Club OSH rewards program. You can earn points towards coupons on every purchase you make. Learn more and sign up today at OSH.com. Thank you very much, Outdoor Supply Hardware. And again, you can ask your smartphone, your smart speaker, Alexa, whatever her name is, play 95.7 The Game, powered by Dell Technologies. Call 877-ASK-DELL. Got to make our good sponsors happy. And, you know, this will make an awful lot of 49er fans listening happy. And Peter, I couldn't. First of all, let me just ask, what do you guys think of Pro Football Focus and their grading system? How much stock do you individually put into it? Because I think it is an interesting tool, but it is not the end-all, be-all of football information. It'll help you create or formulate an argument, and there's enough numbers to bend in there to bend the argument to your will half the time. But it is an interesting aggregation of, you know, football acumen, what people think this guy does in relation to the average at his position. So what do you guys think of Pro Football Focus? Fans, not fans? What do you think?
I'm a big fan, especially when it comes to non-Niners or Bears or Raiders. In other words, players I'm not watching every game, to get a sense of just how they're playing overall. The Pro Football Focus grades, I think, are really helpful.
Their value is that they use sort of the same metrics for everybody. And like every stat, it's going to have some problems in nuance, but that's true of Pro Football Reference. That's true of, you know, FanGraphs in baseball. It's,
if you don't watch, you'll never fully understand.
No, well, and if you focus simply on the grades, you'll miss the nuance. So,
right.
As tools go, it's handy to have on your belt, but your belt should have more than one tool. You can't build a house with a hammer.
Okay, so we all think it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's useful, And what we do like about it is that it's using math to formulate a grade. It's not an opinion. It's not what I think I see. They're looking at, hey, how much route distance is created between this wide receiver and this corner, and a grade is given to both based on the quality of coverage, the quality of separation. It all goes into the mix. They slice it, they dice it in many different ways. And I normally go to Pro Football Focus to look at individual matchups, individual perceptions of games. How are people playing? If my eyes tell me this guy played bad and I see a good score from Pro Football Focus, it makes me go back to the tape to look for things that I might not have caught in the normal flow of action. So that's where it comes into value for me anyways. But I usually am looking at it through the prism of individual players playing. I rarely go to Pro Football Focus for like overall team grades, but I did that this morning and I was surprised by some of the information that it spit back to me about the 49ers. And if the Niners can keep these numbers up, when the quality of competition goes up, this is a football team that could still do something this year. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. So the 49ers right now have the fourth best overall team grade in football. I wasn't thinking that they were the fourth best team in football, but they grade out as the fourth best team in football with the fourth best defensive overall grade, the ninth rated graded offense in the league right now. The ninth rated offense, that feels a little bit more like my eyes have told me it's somewhere in there. I would not have gone all the way to four in terms of overall team in football, but indeed that's where the grade goes. And it's because they have the number one graded rushing offense in football. They have the number one graded tackling defense in football. They have the number two graded coverage defense in football. And as far as route running is concerned, and we talk about what does Kyle do? He runs them open. As far as route running is concerned, they're the fourth best route runners to create separation in football. Like, that's That's better than a lot of people if you just walked up onto the street would have said, what do you think's going on there? That grading is kind of impressive.
You know what's interesting about that, though, is you were kind of pointing this out. All of the specific super high, more granular grades that you just gave, you know, hardest, essentially best hitting defense, best rushing offense, best route running, space creation. As much as those numbers are very high, those are the things that this team does well that we do recognize every Sunday, right? Like it does fit with what our eyes have been telling us on Sundays.
Yeah. Block well, run well, win football games. And you know what? It also confirms our critiques and where they're coming up short. We kept on, you know, how often have we said the pass rush, they might be creating hurries, but they're just not getting home. They're not sacking the actual quarterback. Rushing the quarterback, they're 18th in all football. Special teams. This team hasn't made an important special teams play in a really, really long time, and they had one really go against them with that block punt. Their special teams right now are 29th in football. You got a kicker who accuracy is really not a problem. However, distance is. And there's nobody doing anything positively returning footballs for the 49ers. I mean, a punt return, a kickoff return, it would look like a foreign language if we actually saw one. I mean, would you even recognize the 49ers taking a punt back for a touchdown if it happened? You'd probably have to call a friend to say, what just happened? I hardly ever see that.
Well, okay, if that stat specifically, though, punts are down dramatically. And I think more and more you're also seeing sort of the averages are down because they want to concentrate more on sort of making sure the return man doesn't get any momentum. I mean, you see more punts now, and this is mostly anecdotal, but you see more punts now that are just fair caught because there's no room to do anything with. Johnny Hecker's performance last night for the Rams was unusual because it was not just about placement, it was also about distance. But more punters now, just based on averages over the last 8-9 years, they're punting a lot less and they're not punting as far. And I think there's sort of a philosophical change in the way that special teams coaches view the punt in general.
And there's no doubt that the kicking game has reduced the impact of a punting game. But I'm going back like a decade. When is the last time the Niners have taken a ball back, either on a kickoff or a punt, that really, really changed the outcome of a game? The only special teams play that definitely changed the outcome of a big game is when Kyle Williams muffed that thing, and we're supposed to not talk about that so everyone can go home happy a little bit later on today. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, that was a solid power hour if there ever was one. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. It's time for our Exergen temperature check, and right now it is 73 and sunny in beautiful downtown San Francisco.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks for joining us here today. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, we just had a tour de force performance with the one and only Peter King a little bit later on. Today at 5:30, the Tuesday trifecta that you can set your watch to, because before Halloween, we have our annual Halloween candy draft, and we are going to open up draft dais for the Halloween candy today. Lots of questions will be answered. The suspense, you'll be able to cut it with a knife. It'll be an incredible Tuesday trifecta coming up a little bit later on. If you missed any Peter King, we'll jog that past you once again. So stick around. Plenty more coming up this afternoon. And tonight, of course, it is game 6 of the World Series. I really hope we do get a Tampa Bay win only to get us to a game 7. And at that point, I really don't care. I got to tell you, I didn't grow up a Giant fan, but I did grow up a Cubs fan. And you know what? Cubs fans hate the Dodgers too. Nobody likes the Dodgers unless you're a Dodgers fan. I don't like the Cubs. I don't like the Cardinals. I don't like the Mets. That's how being a team and that's how being a fan of the National League works, right? I don't want to see the Dodgers win a title, but if they do, they will have earned it. I mean, that is a really, really good baseball team. They are like a magnet for a crooked number. Their lineup was built to be one of the scariest things out there. Their pitching staff, flawed as it is, has high points that are among the highest points in the game. And it's just another reason I like Dave Roberts. Doc Roberts is a really, really nice guy, from his just talking to him days, playing days, from his not screwing over anybody days. Like, he is got universal likability about him. I don't like the Dodgers, but I like their manager. It's kind of like we're in the, I don't like the Astros, but I like their manager. So I you know, I will be pulling for them, but nobody likes the Astros either.
No, there are very few people who like the Astros, but the Astros brought it on themselves.
They did.
Because when they won in 2017, they weren't a lovable operation, but nobody detested them. And it wasn't that they cheated as much as how brazen they were about, well, yeah, we did, but you're not going to do anything to us. And they were right. Major League Baseball didn't do anything to them. And that's the thing that I go back with on these NFL COVID violations, too, is that the league doesn't want to punish teams. They know who the league office knows who it works for, just as Major League Baseball knows who it works for. And it wasn't going to fight that. So it looked the other way on the Astros, which is why they are detested today, because I think fans in general took it upon themselves to do what baseball didn't want to. And so it's sort of a volunteer hatred army, if nothing else. It's just, okay, you guys won't do it, we'll do it for you. And so when Tampa beat Houston, people were pretty happy about that. I mean, again, I felt lousy for Dusty Baker, but the rest of it, give me the weird team that has reinvented baseball to hide the fact that they don't want to spend on talent. I'm okay with that, as long as you do it.
Yeah, I mean, screw the Astros. They're not here. I, like you, Damon, did not grow up in the Bay Area, and I don't have any special pro-Giants, anti-Dodgers sentiments. I hate the Dodgers for the same reason I hated the Yankees for my entire childhood, because I don't like watching teams buy things and get to be better because they have more money. So in my book, a win for the Rays is a win for equality and having nice things without spending $200 million. So that's why I hate the Dodgers, and I'm not going to back off that.
If the White Sox bumped their payroll to $200 million this year, would you be behind that?
Listen, some teams should probably consider. No, but you know what? That's part of it, right? Because, I mean, not unlike A's fans, I grew up rooting for the stepsister, the poor
the other team.
The other team, the poor team on the maybe not as fancy side of town. And so I've always hated the teams that spend quadruple what half the league is spending. And I've always disliked that thing about baseball, that teams are allowed to do that. So the Dodgers embody it, and screw them.
Before we get back to some of these pro football focus grades, I don't know if you guys caught on ESPN.com today. They basically asked all the writers that they sent to the ballpark in Arlington there that the game is being played in, hey, what do you think of the new ballpark? Because it's a brand new ballpark. And you've never seen three guys drop a collective meh in a, like, build up and tout the new ballpark. What do you like the most about it? And everyone's like, well, the scoreboard's big. That's it. Concourses are wide. Like, they're like, it looks like a Lowe's. It looks like it's just, there's nothing charming or intimate. They're like, it is way too steep in the upper deck. Fifth level up there means you're like, you're about to fall out of the damn seat. They just killed it. They're like, okay, you know, maybe full to capacity, it's got a shot. Maybe if we could see all the amenities and how they work, it's got a shot. I'm sure the rich people will be taken care of very, very well. But everybody else, you got a soulless, unremarkable ballpark that begs you to look at the scoreboard more than it does the field.
Well, and it replaced a ballpark that was about 15 years old that didn't need to be replaced.
And had so degrees of charm in it.
Well, I don't know how much charm it had in it. It had a little bit of sort of, you know, weird lattice work in the outfield, but there wasn't anything particularly special about that either. But it was necessary because the old ballpark was falling down. This wasn't necessary. All it was a real estate deal. And I think one of the things that people are beginning to sort of viscerally react against, and maybe it's just this year where, you know, conspicuous wealth is more conspicuous and more wealthy than ever. It's that, you know, we didn't come for the ballpark. Those days are over. You know, make us an in-game experience that makes it worth coming out there for. And the fact is, there hasn't been any ballpark that's done that yet. You know, I mean, I don't know that you could speak for SoFi or Allegiant yet, because there haven't been any people in there. But for the most part, if you want to watch a football game, your couch is a better place than the stadium. I mean, you go there to tailgate, and by kickoff, you've exhausted all the fun you're going to have. The rest of it is just you're making being given a corporate tour.
Well, so, but Ray, I think that's a very you opinion, because you don't identify with any part of the fan experience. But the view from the couch for every sport has beaten the view from the vast majority of seats for a long time now. That's not new. And the reason people go to games is for an experience that is about community and fandom. And, you know, I think all the stuff that you kind of poo-poo about sports, to be totally honest. So I do think that is hard to judge without fans in attendance. But it's also, to me, the thing that stands out, Damon, when you talk about the Texas Park is the soulless criticism, because that comes through on TV. And I don't think that's about fans. I think that's about a monstrous building that looks like a convention center with a jumbotron and some grass.
That's the thing. And there's architectural choices that can win the day.
Yeah.
Maybe they cost a little bit more. And they clearly decided to eliminate all of them to keep that thing under budget and on time.
And we have had ballparks that recently, AT&T or whatever it's called now, Oracle Park, is a place that I've taken people to just see the ballpark.
Yeah.
You know, that's a thing.
It is as much of the experience as the game itself. There is so much eye candy all over that ballpark, and the view is unstoppable. You know, and this is going to sound like I'm taking a shot at the Cardinals, and, you know, I will. But when St. Louis replaced what I thought was the great last cookie cutter there was, the old Busch Stadium with new Busch Stadium, I remember talking to my boy Ackerman, what do you think of the new ballpark? He's like, it looks like we saved money on it. And over the years, that was the criticism, to the point where they have gone about re-gussying up that ballpark and building a ballpark experience outside of it, because it just wasn't enough to pull people. And they knew it. They knew that they had gone a little too corporate stuffiness, and they took out all the funds and the bells and the whistles. And that's what people go there for. That's what people like about baseball, because you might have an electronic Coca-Cola sign somewhere. That's where we're talking about San Francisco, taking down an electronic Coca-Cola sign. We're not billboard enthusiasts. We're not even soda drinkers. But it looks cool and groovy and old-fashioned, and we need more of that in the world, not less of that. Anyway, we got to take a real quick break here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.